Occupy Wall Street or Occupy the Concert Hall. This is a special podcast from WQXR.org. I'm Naomi Lewin. Just as protests are spreading around the world over perceived inequities between the very wealthy and the so-called other 99%, a new study on American arts funding makes a similar point. Its central finding is this: billions of dollars in arts funding serve a mostly wealthy, white, and shrinking audience, with only a small chunk of money going to emerging arts groups that serve poorer communities that are more ethnically diverse. The question is this the full picture? And if so, what, if anything, should and can be done about it? Joining us with their views are three experts: Aaron Dorfman, the executive director of the National Committee for Responsive Philanthropy, a watchdog group that conducted the new study, and Yvette Campbell, who is executive director of the Harlem School of the Arts, and Jesse Rosen, CEO of the League of American Orchestras. Aaron, let's start with you, since your group commissioned this study. To use Occupy Wall Street-type terminology, your study found that the top 2% of arts organizations, the ones with very big budgets, got over half of all foundation funding for the arts. And those big institutions don't reflect America's changing demographics. Now, what inspired that study of yours?
Well, this is part of an ongoing series of reports we've been doing for funders concerned with particular issues to help get at some of these issues of equity. So 2 years ago, we put out a set of criteria for philanthropy at its best, challenging our nation's grant makers to do a better job on issues of equity and diversity and to be more strategic in their funding. And it ruffled some feathers in philanthropy, shall we say. And some arts funders misinterpreted what we were saying in 2009. They said, we're an arts funder, and you're telling us to become an anti-poverty funder, which isn't at all what we were trying to say. But we realized that maybe in the initial report we didn't say in as great a depth as we wanted to what we really meant.
And so, this was sort of to back up your findings, this latest report?
Yeah, it really did. I mean, as much as revealing the numbers and the findings of the study, the report also offers pathways for how funders can improve on these things. But
and what are some of those pathways?
Well, one of the ways is that, there are a good deal of arts funders who are primarily funding the canon. So, funding of symphonies and operas and art museums and things of the more traditional art forms. And so funders who are concerned about that doesn't mean they have to abandon that, but here's an example of a creative way that the Cerdna Foundation there in New York, they funded the Cleveland Orchestra to diversify their chamber orchestra musicians and gave $150,000 in 2007 to help the orchestra do that over a three-year period. And there are other examples as well.
Can I just jump in here and ask Yvette, since you represent an organization that is clearly not something that Aaron would identify as the canon.
Right.
The Harlem School of the Arts offers courses to a lot of young people from what would be considered underserved communities. What does this study say to you and your organization?
Well, it says to me that it really concerns me that we're not reflecting the whole, the diversity of our whole arts cultural community. And it also says to me that we will have to take care of the people we're not serving now later. What I'm committed to at Harlem School of the Arts is basically engaging my community around the power of art, where it can change their lives, it can inspire them, it can make them better citizens. So when they don't see themselves reflected in the art that's been funded, then that's kind of tough. It's telling them they don't matter.
Speaking of that, Jesse, there are other studies that have shown that attendance at classical music concerts has been declining in the last decade. So is the funding that the big classical groups are getting out of scale?
I don't think so at all. And, I think one of the things about the report that was a little troubling to me was it kind of suggested that this is all kind of a zero-sum game, that there should be some redistribution from these big organizations with falling audiences to culturally specific organizations. And I think now more than ever is a time where those two universes of delivery systems for the arts are really interdependent on one another. The falling audiences is a phenomenon in virtually every aspect of American life today. You know, when the NEA report came out, we called them up and said, do you have any data on anything besides the arts? And I said, yeah, we got movies, we got sports, we got gardening, we got volunteerism, everything. And everything is down. One of the highest dropping attendance rates or participation rates is in jazz, which is a culturally specific art form. And so the notion that audiences are falling is some demonstration of weakness or irrelevance of any of these organizations, I think would be a huge misreading of the data. And I think what most people concluded about the SPPA report, including the NEA, was that, you know, it's a longitudinal study. So it started back in 1981. And in 81, people were measuring butts in seats. And this was the measure of how healthy you were as an art sector or as a subset of the art sector. And since then, the ways in which people participate in the arts has changed dramatically from either doing it at home, the do-it-yourself movement, the amateur movement, the internet. People are migrating away from the live events in the arts as they are in, you know, just about everything that's going on. So I think it's a little bit of a red herring because it's really affecting the whole culture.
Aaron, what is your response to this?
Well, I guess I would say, do you think our data are wrong? I mean, 55% of the money is going to larger groups with budgets over $5 million.
Yes, I think the data is wrong, and I think that the data is, well, maybe wrong is wrong. I would say it's misleading because part of it is simply a function of scale. And so large arts organizations serve more people, employ more artists, at higher wages with greater benefits. They perform in large venues which have large operating costs. And so if you're going to give a grant to an opera company whose budget is $50 million and that grant is $5,000, but you give a $5,000 grant to a small organization whose budget is $25,000, the impact of the grant on the $25,000 organization is far greater than the $5,000 grant on the $50 million organization. So there's a big scale question going on here.
But couldn't you do more? So, for example, people always give money to, like, Harvard and Yale. But couldn't you do more with that $50 million or the $5,000 with a lot of smaller not-for-profits and smaller organizations? You could do more. You could have greater impact with, instead of building that building in your name, couldn't you do more for more organizations that mean a lot in their community as opposed to all of the money going to urban centers that have big opera companies or big...
Well, that also begs the question, if you give to someplace like Carnegie Hall, they spend millions of dollars every year reaching out to what would be underserved neighborhoods that smaller institutions don't have the resources to do. So where does that fit into the mix?
I will address that in just a second, but, you know, Jesse, I think in addition to the data analysis of our report, it was informed by extensive interviews, and if you talk with people of color-led, smaller cultural organizations, the frustration with attracting foundation funding is really unbelievable. And so this is not, you know, this is not just a matter of the scale questions. It's a real felt need, a tangible issue that, that artists who are part of a healthy arts ecosystem in this country are really experiencing. And on the point of larger institutions reaching out to other communities, that's exactly the kind of thing that we're hoping to encourage. We do think there's a distinction to be made between individual philanthropy and institutional grant making. The foundations, one would expect them to be a little bit more thoughtful and strategic in their giving. And so that's part of why we're encouraging those that have, you know, staff that are really looking at and thinking hard about these issues, they need to make the funding investments that maybe intuitively wouldn't be done by your average donor.
Aaron, you mentioned the frustration factor of smaller outfits trying to attract, and maybe minority outfits trying to attract donors. there is a certain aspect of donors being motivated not just by doing good, but also by a degree of social status that they get, being connected to a very big, prestigious organization, getting invited to fancy parties by that organization, maybe even getting a seat on a prestigious board. Yvette, maybe I should ask you, what can smaller community-based groups do to attract people? Because you represent one of these frustrated organizations.
I do. But we're on a journey out of we're in a turnaround situation. And what we are doing is we are connecting with, the only thing we can do is connecting on social media and connecting with celebrities that are connected to our cause. So they can be our voice. We don't have to spend a lot of money on a billboard on marketing, and we can't. I mean, just full stop, we cannot do that. But we also, we've connected with our foundations that do support us, and they speak on our behalf, which is very interesting. It's something smaller organizations should realize, that their resources in the one, people that do fund them, the foundations and the philanthropic organizations that really do support cultural institutions like theirs, and then go to like funders. So you kind of develop your own family, and you continue to communicate with them. And you don't ask them for money all the time. You inform them how you're doing. Because what happens in a small organization is you have your hands out all the time. You're like, I need money, right. I need money. Sometimes they just want to hear how you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so we're striving to actually connect with our foundations, which we had become disconnected from. And they're coming back to the table because we're just telling them how it's going.
I'm going to get back to your turnaround situation in just a moment, but I want to know whether either Jesse or Aaron, whether you have any ideas on the subject of this frustration and what smaller organizations can do to counteract it.
Well, first of all, I want to agree with Aaron because, you know, I think the challenge of small organizations, and particularly culturally specific ones, in securing whether it's foundation support or individual support, it is simply harder. And when you have a 100-year-old organization and 26 people on your development staff and a board of directors that's plugged in to the boards of foundations and plugged into the captains of industry, there is no question that you have an advantage. And so I'm completely, totally supportive of any philanthropic initiative that helps remedy that situation, as long as it doesn't involve taking money from, you know, one part
robbing
of our
Peter
arts community, robbing Peter to pay Paul. And
I feel you've touched on something, is that I think we have to be innovative about our art and really connect to our communities in more than one way. And that's what foundations are asking us to do now. So you can't just sit back and go, this is what we do. We have to also be relevant to today.
And I want to get back, Yvette, to your turnaround situation, as you called it. In April of 2010, the Harlem School of the Arts had to shut down temporarily until you got gifts of $1 million to be able to reopen. Who were the folks who stepped forward? What kinds of funders helped get you back on your feet?
Well, basically, the entire board was replaced and the entire senior management and leadership of the organization, because we weren't driving toward our mission any longer. We had got
that
lost.
Mission being
empowering young people in music, dance, theater, and visual arts. Simply put, that's what we're supposed to be doing. And so at the time, the city got involved, the mayor, Mayor Bloomberg, Commissioner Kate Levin got involved and said, we'll help you and we will bring your foundations back to the table, but here are the steps you need to take to healthy, you know, being a healthy not-for-profit. And so they were asking more of us. And I was hired in January of 2011, so I didn't go through the total turnaround. They had reconstructed records and audits, and they had done the hard work. They had done the heavy lifting when they found me. Now I am excited about driving toward the mission. Like, full stop, there's nobody like Harlem School of the Arts in the city. We serve four art forms under one roof as a community art school. Everyone's welcome. And to me, that's it. Like, you didn't need to do anything else. You needed to continue to be mission forward, but be innovative. So I want to create a family enrichment series where we have artists come in and speak to our children and do master classes on Saturdays, concerts, invite celebrities to come or great artists, just bringing great art to Harlem.
Which
no-brainer.
Will in turn be more interesting
exactly.
to donors. Aaron,
exactly.
I want to bring you back into this conversation. Because here's something that goes back to your study. Just as the Harlem School of the Arts was closing in April 2010, the Metropolitan Opera got an enormous gift, $30 million from Ann Ziff. And last week, the New York Times reported that the Met broke a fundraising record, raising $182 million. Now, I certainly don't want to begrudge the Met. I'm a big fan of the Met, and in the interest of full disclosure, I produce intermission features for them. Do you have any theories of why the Met raises so much money? They just have very good fundraising people working for them?
They do have good fundraising people, but they also have an exciting programming. They made a decision a few years ago to spend money in order to make money and to invest in their work and in becoming more cutting-edge and relevant. They built this whole HD program that has been a significant revenue generator now in its second or third year of operation. So they were able to put in some of the upfront costs that it took to really revitalize the operation, and that's great. I think that's a real win for everyone involved. Again, we are not intending to say don't invest in these kinds of flagship organizations, but we do want to make sure that those institutions are reaching out to and benefiting all elements of our communities. I wanted to comment on something Yvette touched on, and that was the empowerment piece of the arts. You know, part of this report also focuses on the intersection of arts and social justice work or civic engagement work in our nation. And we were kind of disturbed to find that only about 4% of the grant dollars in arts and culture could really be classified as also being social justice grants. We think there's a real missed opportunity there for arts to be relevant in sparking greater engagement in our democracy. And where it's being done, it's tremendously effective. It just seems to be underinvested in, but there's a real synergy in tapping into people's passions for building a better world while you're also tapping their passion for the arts.
It sounds like there's kind of a conflation of ideas a little bit between the depiction of the large Western canon organizations and the very important efforts around art and social justice. There are 13 symphony orchestras that are involved in El Sistema programs. And for listeners who don't know, this is the Venezuelan system of training young, very poor people in the Western canon. In fact, they rarely use
music.
Music. They use Tchaikovsky, they use Brahms, they don't use very many native Latin American composers. And their premise is that the act of playing together, that the work of ensemble in an orchestra is in fact one and the same with what it takes to build people who can function in complicated situations and negotiate difference and become whole human beings. And as I said, 13 symphony orchestras are involved in doing it, and the LA Phil has just launched, in addition to their version of El Sistema in Los Angeles, a major new entity that actually trains teachers to teach the El Sistema method all over the United States, and that's in partnership with Bard and the Longy School. So to me, it just doesn't seem terribly black and white. I live on the Upper West Side. My 8.5-year-old kid, he spent 2 years at Alvin Ailey, whose budget I'm sure is over $5 million, and 2 years...
That is nodding yes.
It is. And at jazz at Lincoln Center, he goes 2 years to jazz improvisation. We live on the same block as the Museum of Natural History, so mega...
We live around the corner from you.
Oh, my gosh.
We're on 82 in West End.
We'll have to have coffee.
Yes, exactly.
But I mean, the point is, he's been able to avail himself of all of these various forms of artistic expression. Some of them are the Western canon. Some of them are... indigenous cultural expressions unique to the United States. And, you know, they all matter. They all have a place. And I think we're just all better off the more we're connected with each other. And I think Aaron probably shares that idea.
Actually, I do, Jesse. So, and I'm familiar with the Los Angeles example and really impressed with what they're doing there as well and the whole El Sistema approach. Some really good stuff. You know, the point of the study was not to draw a bright line and say, you know, this kind of funding is good and this kind of funding is bad. The point was to take a critical look at you know, where are the dollars going now, and to put something in the hands of executives and trustees of our nation's grant makers that would help them examine more critically their own funding and ask themselves the hard questions about, are our dollars going exactly where they are most needed, exactly where we really want them to go? So far, what I'm hearing from funders is that the report is helpful and useful in opening up that conversation.
Well, let's get to what's going to happen in the future. And I'm going to address this to you, Yvette. In the AP article about this new study, Michael Kaiser, the president of the Kennedy Center, was quoted as saying the biggest issue for arts organizations of color is that they have been overly reliant on foundation and government funding, and that groups like that really need more individual donors, not just foundation donors. Yeah. Would you agree, and what are you doing about
it? I would agree, and I'm actually going through several seminars by the Kennedy Center's DeVos management because we're applying for that kind of funding, and it requires you attend a seminar. But the wonderful thing that and I agree with Michael on this, is that you can't just rely on government and foundation funding, because that takes a lot of your resources. To do a foundation grant is a huge undertaking. If you have two people in your development office, which I do, then they're spent doing that, and there's not enough time to cultivate individual donors or to plan an event where people could see your art form in its finest. What we've been doing is essentially trying to get back to our family. So we have reached out to all the donors that used to give to HSA, and then we're having them reach out to their outer circle. And the foundations are helping, but again, you can reach more people and try to reach individuals and reach diverse individuals. So you don't have to just reach the Harlem community and say, please support us. It could be the whole city, and letting them know what you offer under one roof. And letting them know about, for example, our street has been named Dorothy Maynard Place. And so to me, this wonderful woman and her history, she sang at Truman's inauguration and Eisenhower's inauguration, and she was a concert soprano opera singer. And telling her story is vital to everyone in the city, and that she came to New York to establish this organization. Connecting with people. Fundraising, we forget, is just connecting with people. And so we're doing that daily. In addition to our foundation work, I think we have really diversified our funder base.
Aaron, would you say that we now, based on this study, do we need new fundraising business models? Is there a for-profit model that smaller arts groups should be considering?
Oh, I don't know about that. I think that might be especially challenging for smaller arts groups to create a self-sustaining for-profit model. But I do agree that long-term sustainability lies in having a variety of funding sources, including a robust individual donor base.
Okay, so this might be slightly morbid, but given the changing face of America ethnically, do you think that when the current generation of philanthropists is gone and has left the last of their money to big organizations, and in this, you know, model that we have had of giving, that we might start to see a leveling of the philanthropic playing field?
There's new wealth being created all the time, new philanthropists entering the scene every day. Some new billionaire is starting to practice philanthropy. So certainly things will continue to evolve and change. The latest trend in, sort of the new wealth creators and the new philanthropists has been for a very technocratic and linear approach to solving social problems, which doesn't bode particularly well for investment in the arts and creativity.
I would just add that I think as new generations of philanthropists emerge, that one of the challenges the legacy institutions have is to be continually a part of American life as it keeps evolving, and that does have to do with the engagement of those organizations with multiculturalism and with different ethnic groups and class groups, and there's no way to stay frozen in the past, they're really going to have to keep moving ahead if they're going to track that philanthropy.
And also, I think it starts from the youth. I mean, honestly, if the philanthropists are dying off, as you say, not to be morbid, it will be the generations to come that support the arts. But they also have to be fans. They also have to be audience goers, appreciators of the art, taking your children to a museum, supporting these larger organizations, supporting the small ones in your community. If we don't support it, it will disappear. And so I think it starts with our children.
Great. Thank you all for joining us. This has been the latest edition of WQXR's podcast, Conducting Business, with guests Aaron Dorfman, Executive Director of the National Committee for Responsive Philanthropy, Yvette Campbell, Executive Director of the Harlem School of the Arts, and Jesse Rosen, President of the League of American Orchestras. Thank you all.
Thanks, Naomi.
Thank you. Naomi.
Brian Wise produces this podcast, and the engineer was Jason Isaac. I'm Naomi Lewin. Thanks for listening.